You're listening to Hooked on Startups, where every week you'll hear from some of the most talented, inspiring, and successful entrepreneurs who share their real-life stories, how they overcame challenges and failures, and how they mastered success. Get ready for some of the best business tips, tricks and tactics, and some frank, unscripted discussions. Here's your host, Matthew Sullivan.
I'm just going to go for it, Shannon. I'm just going to press the button. Live dangerously.
Not the big red one. No.
That's
bad. Things happen when that happens.
Well, but the thing is, you're not around to know what happens. You don't know. What I mean is that you're not there afterwards. So does it really matter? You know, if it's the complete global reset button that you're talking about.
Correct.
I do know this thing about the nuclear football as well. I mean, is it not just, I reckon there's cheese sandwiches in there, really, you know, rather than all this paraphernalia about, you know.
Well, the last three presidents we've had, I wouldn't trust them with a regular football, let alone a nuclear one.
Well, listen, having said that, I mean, it's actually quite difficult to control a regular football. So, I mean, I've tried it and it is impossible. But anyway, I think we're digressing here. Shannon, Robert, can I please wholeheartedly, with open arms, welcome you to Hooked on Startups, another exciting episode.
Yep, glad to be here.
So, well, you say that, but we've only just begun. Well, I will see how you feel in a few minutes. But you're a bit of a real estate chap. Is that a fair way of describing what
Correct.
You do? And real estate is a good way of not losing money, I think. Is that another?
Well, it can be if done properly, right? There's a lot of.
I think you're leading up to something here.
Yeah. You know, but a lot of things. I mean, there's a lot of things that you can do to not lose money. There's a lot of things you can do to make money. There's a lot of things you can do to make tax advantaged money. And real estate is probably the most tax advantaged way to make money.
Do you know what? It's funny. If you look through LinkedIn, I think every second or every third person is a real estate investor, developer. And having been involved, funny enough, when I moved over here, one of the first things I did was try and throw myself into real estate. So I do have a little bit of experience about how difficult it is to actually get it right. Now, you've got some, you know, decades of experience. So
I know I look like I just started.
And I was going to say, how is that possible? Because, you know, clearly either, you know, you're doing something, you know, correct and right and incredible, or the filters on Zoom are working really well.
Well, you know, the thing is, I mean, I grew up in a real estate family, right? I mean, I'm a fourth generation realtor and a second generation builder developer. So we didn't call it indentured servants during the weekend. But that's where I worked. I worked on the job sites. I saw my mom doing open houses. I saw my dad building the houses, building industrial buildings. And all I've ever done is real estate. And so as I've seen that progression, I've learned that it's everybody's favorite topic to love or hate, depending on the economic cycle that we're in. And so now we have a lot of people who are back in the startup phase of their real estate career. These are a lot of times the same kind of people that got into the career in 2006 and 2007 before the global meltdown. Decided it was too hard, got out of it. But, you know, here's a funny statistic. Only about 80% of realtors don't do a transaction.
Only 80%.
Only 80% go through the licensing process, get their license, and never actually buy or sell a home for someone else, let alone themselves. The number is astronomically higher of those that are in the real estate business of being a realtor that actually own more than one property. Like it's almost 96% of realtors do not own more than other than their primary home in the real estate game.
And again, that's really testament to how difficult this business is, because on the surface, it looks easy, doesn't it? Because everyone is an expert in real estate because we all live in houses and our houses go up every year without fail, don't they? And we do nothing. We do nothing to do that. So therefore, you know, I am a... On paper, one can be worth quite a lot of money because of the equity in your home. So that gives you this sort of false sense of security that you actually are a real estate expert. So,
right.
You know, but I think you're involved in a very niche, not so much a niche, hang on. Real estate is such a large vertical, and we'll talk about vertical real estate in a minute. But tell me more about the area that you sort of focus on.
Well, you know, speaking of startups, right? So we actually are in development. So we look at the piece of ground when it's just a bare field. It's just, you know, the last development we're doing, we're putting 190 units in where there was a horse pasture. So we did we looked at the demographic, we looked at the neighborhoods, we looked at the schools, we looked at the crime rate, we looked at the need for housing. We looked at all of those things, selected this particular piece, took it through all of the entitlement process. And Matthew, before you ask, I had to explain this to my children too. Entitlement on land is not the same as what they grew up with. Okay.
Does that not mean that they get it after you've built it?
No, it's very, very different, right? Land entitlement means that it's worth a lot more when you're done with it, whereas entitlement with children usually means they're worth less. But that's a topic for a different day.
Actually, having tried to sell my children many times.
Yes. Well, you know, then you've got all the disclosures and, you know, are they current on their shots and what kind of grades do they get and do they clean the room? I mean, there's too many questions to ask.
You have to give guarantees as well. Oh. So it's just,
and if I wanted to give a guarantee, I'd just raise it myself, which is, you know.
Anyway.
So we do the entitlement process and then we begin to fundraise for that. We involve partners with us that want to be involved in a limited partnership. And we take care of constructing that all the way through the vertical buildings. And then we operate those buildings as the landlord, as the property management company. And we continue to do that so that everybody's getting a passive income without having to go to work every day. So that's really where we start from the ground up and wind up with a finished product and a passive investment when we're done.
And do you get different investors in at different stages? Because the risk profile of land development is different to the risk profile of a seasoned performing multifamily apartment complex.
Well, and you're very correct there. And yes, we do. And the reason that we do that is not only so much for the land development being whether or not it's risky, we can discuss that because land development is really a lot less risky than buying a finished apartment complex. But what it is it's what people want. Some people are looking for cash flow. Some people want to go to the mailbox every day. They want to get their money out of the mailbox. They want to know that they got money coming in every month. And there's other people that want to grow their money that are looking at it and say $100,000 is not enough to retire on. I need $1 million. So I need that to grow before it brings me cash flow. And so really understanding who your two different investors are, understanding that type is really, really huge in getting the right development or the right investment opportunity in front of them. Because somebody that's looking for cash flow is definitely not interested in a ground-up development because there is no cash flow until the tenants show up. That could be 10 months. It could be 2.5, 3 years in some cases with larger developments. So making sure that you've paired the right person with the right investment is really key. The first thing you wanted to start with.
When we sort of started this conversation, you mentioned that investors are coming in pretty much late in what you perceive as the cycle. So we've seen some astronomical growth. I was reading one of the CoreLogic reports this morning, something like 18% year-on-year growth in some areas, which is off the charts. Now, obviously, as a real estate developer, you have your finger on the pulse in terms of land prices. And I think you're focused in the sort of Boise, Idaho area. But, you know, what whisperings or what writing do you see on the wall for the sort of short and medium term?
Well, there's a couple of things that happened in the past. In 2008, when the global meltdown happened, builders stopped building. New construction ground to a halt. And during the following half a dozen years, we created a deficit of about 7 million residential units necessary to house properly the United States population. In fact, right now, I just saw an article that we have the highest number of under 30 living with their parents of any time in history, including right after World War II. We have over 54% of the single under 30 years old are still living with their parents. Okay. So here we are. We don't have we have a housing shortage. We're 7 to 9 million units short. And that doesn't take into account what COVID's done in the fact that people have left San Francisco and they're not really coming back. No. New York is down on population.
Much to the distress of the incumbent population in Idaho. Yeah. I think everyone's moved to Idaho, it seems.
Well, here's another fun fact, Matthew. You know, in California, 1.8 million people pay 48% of that state tax.
Yes. It's
They're the ones that are the most mobile.
Which is another interesting factor because if you look at the mobility of these populations, COVID really acted as a catalyst
Correct.
A lot of people that were sitting on the sidelines, primarily in California, because it has a very large population, you know, those people begin to move. Now, do you see that as an ongoing factor? In other words, people moving out of these states where, you know, house price appreciation has been so high that their dollars now are worth a lot more in other states?
Well, yeah. And we've seen that just in, you know, in the last 5 years, we've seen a 75% increase in housing prices here in Idaho. Right. So we've almost doubled in 5 years in the cost of a home. But the reality is it's still fairly affordable as far as the national average. And the other thing that it does is it provides a quality of life. Often yes. people ask me, why Boise? And my answer is very, very simple. You must not have ever been there.
Yeah.
Because when you come here and you see what it is, there's no question this is a great place to live. Right. And so when we see that, people are starting new businesses all the time. They're coming out of California. They sold their overpriced house. They got $2 million. They come up here. They buy a $600,000 house, which is a very nice 2,800 square foot brand new home. And they start a business. And they get into that business that they always wanted to do, whether it was, you know, crafting or, you know, window tinting or whatever. They have that opportunity. And so we see a lot of startups coming out of that into our area. So now we see a lot of incubator space for more jobs, more businesses. And again, we need more people to fill those jobs. So it kind of creates this cycle that now we're looking more and more attractive because our wages are now climbing also.
Yes. And again, from your perspective, are you involved in the site? You find the site, you entitle the land, you build the properties. You then said that you manage them. Do you sell them on at that point and then recycle that capital? Or are you looking to grow, you know, a large portfolio to compete with some of these, you know, smaller, you know, institutions and hedge funds?
Well, one of the things that we've found is that some of the problems with real estate is the lack of liquidity. You know, you get involved in real estate, there's not a whole lot you can do with it. So we've kind of started another startup on that, which is a blockchain technology company that now allows you to turn your real estate holdings into a blockchain, which allows for the transfer of the asset independent of the general partner or the syndicator. As a lot of people relate blockchain to cryptocurrency, which it can be, it has about as much correlation to cryptocurrency as the paper things in your wallet actually being worth a damn, right? Yeah. So the reality is, blockchain is a technology that conveys information and spreads it over a wide network so that it's public information. In that, we're able to tokenize or divide the shares that we would normally divide on paper. We're able to put that into a digital format so that everybody can see that. What that allows to happen is after a period of 366 days, the lockout period put on by the SEC, now you, Michael or Matthew, are able to trade some of your securities, some of your tokens for cash so that you can now ride through that upcycle of the development, take some of your cash, recycle that back to yourself while we hold that asset long term. So it really opens up the envelope and it allows other people to come in when it's stabilized. The returns won't be quite as good. You're going to pay a higher price for that share of that property, but you're going to know we're in the cash flow portion of that cycle. And now you're going to have that security of knowing that, yeah, I might have paid $110 for it instead of $100, but I know I've got cash flow every month and I don't have to worry about, are they going to get this finished? And is the price of lumber going to go through the roof? And are they going to go bankrupt?
And again, this is another very interesting topic because this is it my vertical equity?
That's correct. Yeah.
Okay. So, and again, how is that a relatively new approach that you're taking?
You know, it is and it isn't. I mean, CrowdStreet, you know, Yield Street, all of those have been around for a while that create the crowdfunding sites. Yes. And so we took that approach, but we decentralized it because we didn't really want it to be locked in. And one of the things that's difficult with syndications is the liquidity.
Yes.
See, even with CrowdStreet, you're not in control of how long you're in the deal. The general partner is, who has brought the deal to CrowdStreet. So when they want to exit, they do, and you can't move before then or until then.
Yeah.
This allows you to put yourself in control. Then the other part of what my vertical equity is it's going to be a platform where other syndicators are going to put their properties. And so now, Matthew, you've been involved in a deal that John put on there, and now it's time you want to sell some of that out, you want to get involved in another development. You can actually trade in between assets on the site. So it really becomes, let's call it the NASDAQ for real estate in a tokenized format, and it allows for the digital tracking of all of the ownership from person to person to person through the simplicity of blockchain.
And so presumably each property or each development will have its own set of tokens relating to.
Exactly.
So you've got one token that represents a share mm-hmm. in the LP or the LLC, whatever you want to set up. So you're correct. Creating a structure offered under Regulation D, presumably.
Correct.
So that means that you're just working with accredited investors at this stage.
Well, no, that's not entirely true. We're working through the process to become a Reg A Plus so that we can work with anyone. Currently, we also offer a 506C, which is for accredited only, but we also have a 506B platform on there as well so that people that are unaccredited can also participate. Because the whole goal of this, Mike, or Matthew, I apologize for this.
Just don't call me late for dinner.
I've got it right on my screen here. All I have to do is read it. But, you know, reading was never my forte. But one of the things that we see here is that there's a real discrepancy between the startup investor and the sophisticated investor and finally the accredited investor. And our goal of this platform is to disrupt that. Blockchain technology is designed to disrupt, we are here to disrupt the investors that can be involved. And over the near term, I would say in the next 6 months, you'll see two things happen. One, we'll be offering $500 buy-ins so that people can get involved for a $500 increment. But the other thing we're going to do is we're going to do a tenant-facing side to this that will allow tenants to invest and buy tokens in the real estate that they actually are tenants in.
Yeah.
So they can sit there and create their own savings account and own part of the apartment complex of 190 or 300 units and actually begin to grow their wealth while they have the simplicity of just being a tenant.
Now, again, this is fascinating, but there are a number of companies that are working in similar space to you. And my experience is that normally they start out as technology companies where they might have some background in securities or technology. But the biggest issue that all of these platforms, and there are companies like Lofty.ai and a few other companies, but supply of product inventory is the biggest challenge. So in other words, how do you scale this? Because you've got your approach is different because you're coming at it primarily from the real estate side.
Correct.
And you're then adding technology on top of that, which then makes your current processes more efficient. So what's your view of the other sort of market participants who are trying to create these other types of in exchanges?
There's a couple of differences that I see. One is the people that are coming from the tech platform, from the tech experience, they understand technology very well, but field operations are foreign to them. And so what they get done doing with a underwriting model is completely making it unbuildable, right? I mean, for lack of a better analogy, it's like getting Republicans and Democrats in a room and trying to have a civil conversation. It's just not going to happen, right? So the reality is when we approach people, we're coming at the syndicator. We're coming at the developer. We're not as concerned about the technology because we've got a group of guys in a dark room that we throw pizzas through the slot every now and again that are building the technology, and they build what we tell them and they know what we want. And so in that, we're building the platform that we have the connection with the real people that understand real deals that bring real underwriting to it so that when you get it to the platform, we already know it's going to work. These guys have proven track records and they know what they're doing and we know they know what they're doing. And so at the end of the day, we're not asking the question of, can a contractor build it? Of course, a contractor can build it. Can a tech guy sell it? That's really where we've created that interaction and made it work better.
And I suppose the other biggest challenge is creating liquidity and transactions in a secondary marketplace, because theoretically, your shares in an LP or an LLC are tradable, even if they're non-tokenized after the lockout period. But it's finding willing buyers, really.
Right.
So how do you see that developing? Is that going to be a major challenge for you, creating a marketplace where there is activity, so someone who wants to sell actually has a willing buyer on the other side of the trade?
I think that's going to be the simplicity of all. And I'll name a couple of platforms that have done very well doing that. eBay, Uber. You know, these platforms, all they did was find somebody with a car or find somebody with a bunch of junk in their garage that wanted to get rid of it and gave them a platform. So now I think that the reality of putting the information on the platform, putting it out there, I think that you're going to see a lot of people interested in doing that, including syndicators, because the reality is it creates for a, syndicators go a cycle. They have a life cycle on the project of 3 to 7 years, and then they're going to sell the project. because it's time to redo the carpet and redo the paint, put new deck chairs by the pool. This allows for liquidity to come into the transaction from outside investors just based on price increase that doesn't include the bank. So you're going to be able to do a refi by offering equity for sale that has climbed for all of the investors. And the other side that we've done with that, and this is the difficult part about what you mentioned, Matthew, with the paper transaction, is you've got to go find the guy that wants to buy your position, and then you got to sell him that position, and you've got to get approval from the general partner. And then when the distributions are made, the general partner has to go find the guy you sold it to.
Yes.
Well, that's the beauty of the technology, is the blockchain filters that, just like a Plinko machine. You put your distributions in the top and it follows the blockchain down and goes to the bottom level and makes the distribution at that level. So you can now make a transaction happen tonight, distributions are tomorrow, and you can get, I don't have to be alerted to that, because as the distribution goes out, it follows the chain and gets the distribution to the right person, not to the person that had it prior. And so it really makes it liquid and leaves the developer or the GP completely in the dark, which is where we prefer to stay.
And that's actually very valid, because the whole point of the technology is to make something easier or better that is happening today. So your use of technology is where you've got willing buyers, in other words, people that want to invest in right. your real estate properties, but are not part of the syndicates. They don't want to be locked in for a number of years. They don't want those big ticket investment prices. And it's interesting when you talk about Reg A Plus, because that opens up the doors to non-accredited investors, and the shares right. are immediately tradable.
Correct.
So in other words, you don't have yeah. that, you know, 12-month lock-in period.
And then you have people that want to buy now, or there's people that, you know, want to buy, you know, $150 or $250 a month in real estate. They want to just kind of, you know, Absolutely. Set it and forget it. But how do you do that other than put it in your bank account, wait for 2 or 3 years, and then go make the purchase? This allows people to do those kinds of things. And it really opens the door for everyone to participate in real estate without having to be a bigwig or have, you know, $1 million portfolio or even a $50,000 minimum like a lot of these require.
And you mentioned people like CrowdStreet, who were one of the very early adopters of the Jobs Act and crowdfunding. I think they've been around for 6 or 7 years now. And, you know, I think they've transacted at least $1 billion.
I saw today it was just over 2 billion.
Was
but
it?
Yeah, lots.
So there's some real legs there. And do you think that this is a natural progression? I mean, is blockchain really that important to make this happen? Do you think that's the technology that's actually allowed all of this sort of free yes. movement and liquidity to happen?
You know, the reality is you've got your asset manager that is, or your ATS, your asset transfer agent, that is keeping track of everything. They're keeping track of the cap table, and they've got all this stuff. And that used to be a very arduous process, because it was a sounding board back and forth. And I would say, Matthew, it's the 29th of the month. We're getting ready to make distributions. We've had these changes. Please update the cap table. You would go in and manually input it. Then we'd get a new deal back, and then we'd put the distribution yes. in. Now that all happens seamlessly at the blink of an eye, and it's done on your mobile phone.
Yes.
You can go in and trade. That cap table is updated immediately. Nobody needs to be notified. I just stick the money in the top end, and it comes down and it follows the chain out. So the reality is blockchain takes everybody's hands off of it and locks it in and makes it a smart contract too, so that everybody can see what the contract is. Everybody can see what's going to happen over the next 3 to 5 to 7 to 10 years, because it's all written in chain.
So if you're able to turn an illiquid asset, which is real estate, which is these large developments, into tiny fractions, the research that you've done is, you know, do you see that there really is another $2 billion potentially awaiting your investment platform?
Well, I think that there's another 20 billion. When you talk about there's, 7 million houses in America, one of the biggest gaps between developers and constructed product is cash.
Yes.
When you can break down the door and the barrier to cash by putting it on a platform where people can find it and they can be found, I think you do a lot of things. It's not that eBay is that successful at selling skateboards, but you happen to want a skateboard and you happen to know that if I go to eBay, I'll likely find one. And so I think putting that platform together where people can come to it from both sides of the equation, and soon will be also tenant facing on this, I think is really going to change the game. It's really going to change a lot of things, because people will be able to now not only see the benefit of being involved in real estate investment, but it takes a lot of the trepidation out of it when you know that you can reliquify fairly quickly.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest difference with the existing crowdfunding platforms, is because all of the real estate crowdfunding platforms offer the ability to buy into a project. But again, you don't have control and there's no immediate exit strategy. You have to wait until the project or the general partner or the managing member, depending on how it's structured, decides that the project has come to an end. Now, from on that side, so you're now firmly dealing with the securities world. So on one side, we have real estate and all of the regulatory requirements around that and all of the challenges to make sure you got the yield. But you're now, because you're trading in securities, you're now firmly in the securities world. So what sort of learnings or challenges have you faced learning to straddle those two very different universes?
You know, one of the things that I learned early on, to steal a thought process from Henry Ford, I didn't know, and I still don't know everything there is to know about the securities world, but I have some great attorneys that do. And I think that it's important to always surround yourself with people that know how and what you're needing to do to keep ahead of that. And so what I've done is the company that builds our technology has a former SEC attorney with them.
Yeah.
And then we have a really good SEC attorney. In fact, it was really great watching these two guys meet for the first time. It was like they were both speaking the same language and nobody else in the room could understand.
Yes.
Right.
Fantastic.
And that's when I knew, hey, we have the right combination here, because the last thing I want to do, Matthew, is wear orange. I mean, look, me and I'm not going to look good in orange. I'm 5'9". Prison is not for me. Right. And so to stay out of that, you hire some of the best and the brightest to make sure that you're not even close to that line where you could get into trouble. And that's really where we've landed with these guys, is to make sure that we're putting together a platform that's responsible, that's ethical, that is well-researched and well-funded, so that we're not running into the dark and finding out later that the SEC, when they come in, they don't ask and they don't act nicely. They close things down. They seize assets. They do all kinds of things, because there's some serious offenses when you're dealing with other people's money. And so we've really made sure that we're staying above board on all that. We've got great legal counsel. They're tied in tight. They're working on every step of the way, both from the forward-facing side and the SEC-facing side, so that we're making sure that we're all in compliance. We have KYC that's integrated into the platform, so you can't even see what's going on the platform until you've told us who you are and what you're doing.
Which is great, because this is exactly what is needed, I think, to move securities and trading onto blockchain and to really go to the next stage of, this is like crowdfunding, you know, version 3 or version 4,
yeah,
where you've got liquidity, you've got trading, and people are comfortable going onto platforms knowing that they are buying what they think they're buying. And I suppose for you, the ability to tap into retail investment capital means that you've probably got lower expectations in terms of return profile. So you've got a bit more leeway in terms of what you have to pay the investors. And also you're tapping into new sources of capital, which means that you've then got the ability to build more projects. So it can be a virtuous circle.
It is. And one of the other things that we are looking to do is we're looking to reach out to other syndicators to bring them to the platform. And one of the things that has been difficult for syndicators that are wanting to get started, that have, you know, done their first deal, maybe it's a small deal, it's a 20-unit deal or 30-unit deal, and they're just really trying to scale their business. Some of the cost to syndicate can be prohibitive. I mean, a Reg A Plus starts at $75,000 and usually winds up somewhere closer to $1.5 million.
Yeah,
that's not something everybody's got laying around.
Absolutely.
So the reality is, as we move forward with that, we're opening doors for other people to join the platform. And when they do, then we have the doors open for other investors to join the platform. And that retail cycle, I believe, will begin to break up the monopolies that you see. You know, what are you going to do with your retirement account? I mean, you've got a couple of choices, but none of them are really any good, because by the time you get done paying all the fees, there's not much left. You can put it in the stock market. That's another place where Robinhood will help you out, especially if you buy GameStop. That didn't work so well. But those are the kind of options that are available to people. And when you can provide an ethical option that allows people through education to become involved with a blockchain technology platform, get with vetted syndicators that know what they're doing, have repeated track records, can be counted on to bring it through, even when it's not great returns, it's still done.
Yes.
Those are the kind of things that you want. And now you're opening that up to the general public. I think I really believe it will be the next wave. And you're making that tradable. So you've got multiple options of projects on the marketplace.
Yes. I think that's, I mean, we've seen success in crowdfunding that is far greater, I think, than anyone ever anticipated when the platforms sprung up. So is this the thing that you're sort of most focused on? And most, is this the future of Shannon Robner Industries, or?
You know, it really is. It really is. You know, one of the things that we've learned is through the last year and a half that building isn't as fun as it used to be.
Yes.
You know, with scarcity here, I mean, from paint to flooring to cabinetry to granite countertops, I mean, everything has gone scarce. But the reality is the demand is very, very strong. And so I love developing. I love getting projects ready to go. I'm not really keen on building them. So this allows me to focus on what I love and allow other people to become the builders, the syndicators, and really bring a platform together that opens the doors and the floodgates to a lot of people to become investors in real estate.
And I guess also you can leverage all of those years and decades and, you know, generations of experience to be
able
to properly vet.
Just weeks. We don't need to go into decades. It's not really that long.
I can cut that out in the edits if you like.
I don't want
to make you look bad, you know. I think that's the big difference, isn't it? Because just having a platform that provides access to deals is one thing, but making sure that those deals. So I suppose part of the obligation that you may face is turning people away. Do you see your platform as being an open platform like CrowdStreet, or being a vetted platform where you only accept maybe, you know, 1 in 10 deals?
I think that is the biggest thing that we're going to be doing is we're going to put guardians at the gate. Because we're not interested in bringing every deal to the table. While we do want to be profitable and we do want to make money, we believe that opening this up to a lot of people will allow us to vet the right kind of producers, the right kind of people that have got the experience that can bring quality,
yes,
and bring repetition. You know, real estate can have its ups and downs. As we know, 08 wasn't great. But if you held on to it, you're in great shape now.
Yes.
So everybody looks at it from a different angle. But the reality is if you've got a vetted sponsor, you've got somebody that's financially stable, you've got somebody that's got a repeated track record, and you vetted that and you bring that to the platform, I think you're going to have a recipe for success.
And that's the big differentiator. It must be that the ability to make sure that at least some type of third party, you know, view or you know, approach has been made. So that,
absolutely,
because you know there's a lot of projects on that could quite easily be put up on a platform that don't exist, or and you only find out afterwards when it's too late, and the blockchain technology part of it doesn't really help at that stage.
No. I mean, look, money that goes into the wind goes into the wind, whether it's on blockchain or paper, you know, and that's where the SEC is trying to stop that from happening. But the problem is there's not a vetting process of the syndicator prior to the issuance of the
that's outside the SEC.
The BPM.
So, yes.
That's where we come in and we go, these are real numbers. We've looked at the Cincinnati market. There's not a 23% rent growth. These numbers aren't going to work. These aren't going to pencil.
And I think that's the thing which has to separate you from the no doubt countless new market entrants who may have the technology and the regulatory side. Because you can buy in the regulatory side, you can buy in the ATS platforms, you can buy in the KYC. So it is a whole new industry that I think we are at the beginning of. I think, would you agree that we've done the initial sort of approach where, you know, where it wasn't, we weren't sure whether it was going to go or no go, but it looks like it's really going to start moving now.
Yeah, no, I agree with you there. I think we are definitely in a place where it's been vetted as an industry. You know, it's now, you know, in the second and third and fourth reiteration of that, where now you're combining the additional things that we bring that make it a complete package. It's not just a package that runs, you know, we're trying to make this whole package run autonomously. After we've vetted the syndicator, after we've gone through the deal, the whole thing between the syndicator and the limited partners is all hands off.
Yeah.
Whereas other platforms, it all has to run through the platform. It's all regulated and monitored by the platform.
Yes.
We're taking that piece out and making it something that through the smart contracts that lock in the terms and the conditions and the paydays and all of those things, it's now autonomous. And the sale of the assets, the transfer, the trade, all of that just flows through there and should be seamless.
Yep. Very exciting stuff. But all that aside, Shannon, now, you know, all this sort of this preamble about real estate and blockchain, you know, that was just a bit of chit chat to pass the time so that I can get to the Hooked on Startups quickfire questionnaire.
All righty. Well, let's do it.
Are you sure? Are you ready?
Well, I mean, you know, if that's the preamble and the chit chat, this next part's going to be really excellent.
Right. Well, Yes, I like to set myself low standards and consistently fail to achieve them. So, yeah, beware. So anyway, Shannon, question number one. What is your favorite word?
Impossible.
And question number two, what is your least favorite word?
No.
Question three, what are you most excited about right now?
You know, I'm excited about where we're at in history. I think that, you know, it's a time in the market that has a lot of inflation in it. It has a lot of uncertainty in it. And that's where real money is made.
Yeah.
Because when you have an understanding of what wealth transfer really is, it's not stocks. It's not paper trades. It's not phantom assets or owning shares of Google. It's real hard assets. And I think right now in the next 5 to 8 years, you're going to see hard assets do phenomenally well, which is something I happen to know a few things about.
Again, that resonates. Very interesting. Question four, what turns you off right now?
You know, I think the thought process that everybody is an expert. I'm certainly not, but I've sought out a lot of experts and I've found that even a lot of those that say that they're experts aren't really. And so I love a good team. I love when everybody comes together, but I hate it when somebody says I'm an expert and I can do it all.
What do they say? The definition of an expert is a drip under pressure.
Yeah.
Question five, what sound or noise do you love?
The sound of an airplane engine. As a pilot, I love flying. And so firing up the plane and going for a ride.
You didn't mention anything about the fact you're a pilot. We're going to have to
actually have a flight school.
Oh, why didn't you say?
Excuse me, Matthew, I have a flight school.
There you are. We'll just have to put that in the beginning.
That was another startup that I did that was purely for financial or for tax purposes.
And are they sort of plank wings or are they sort of the egg beater things?
No, they're the regular airplanes. They're not helicopters. And so what we do is we teach other people how to fly. We've got 3 aircraft currently, another one on its way. And we use those for my investors who are looking for depreciation, a tax derivative, right?
Well, so you know what they say, the fastest way to make a large fortune in aviation. No, how do you make a small fortune in aviation?
Start with a large fortune.
Start with a large one. That's right. Best way of converting money into noise.
That's right. That's right. So, yeah, so that's what we do with those.
That's fantastic. Well, we have to have a completely different session about...
Excellent.
Question number six, which is after five. As you can tell, I'm not wearing my glasses. What sound or noise do you hate?
The sound of a crying baby.
I was going to say the sound of an engine that doesn't actually quite catch, which means... Yeah. Right.
Being at 10,000 feet and not hearing the sound of an engine.
Yeah, maintenance bills, yes. Followed by gravitational attraction, followed by paperwork. Question number seven, what is your favorite curse word?
Probably the F word.
It's got to be.
It just has such an effect.
It is. It is. You know, it's just, I think on every single one of my podcasts, I bore people by just saying that I just love that word more than any other word. But question number eight, what profession other than yours would you like to attempt?
You know, I think I would love being in the culinary field. I love to eat, right? So that's what everybody thinks. I love to eat, so I should be a chef.
This is all this stuff is coming out, you know. Why? We should have done 3 minutes on real estate, 4 minutes on blockchain, the rest on cooking and flying.
There you go.
Question number nine. What profession would you not like to attempt?
Dentistry.
Think about the answer. Come on.
No.
Would you A, like to be a dentist, or B? The final question. If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
Well done, good and faithful servant.
Fantastic. Well, Shannon, it's been such a pleasure. My final question, final question, before all of the other questions, that is how do people get in touch with you? How do they find out more about what you're doing in real estate, how you're bringing real estate to the blockchain? What's the best way of contacting you?
Matthew, I'm so glad you asked. You can reach me one of two ways at shannonrobnett.com, or you can reach me at buyverticalequity.com. Those two ways will get in touch with me, but I'm on all the social platforms, LinkedIn, Instagram, all that other stuff, but myverticalequity.com or shannonrobnett.com.
Fantastic. Well, I'll make sure that all of those links are in the show notes. And again, thanks so much for being on. It's been a real pleasure, Shannon, and look forward to following your progress, staying in touch and, you know, watching you, you know, take over the world of, you know, tokenized
real estate. Thank you, Matthew.